Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Hi, welcome to the NASCAR NBC podcast. I'm your host, Nate Ryan, joined by Dale Jarrett, and we are midway through the month of May, which of course means Indy 500 here at NBC Sports. But before we get to Indy, which we're going to talk about a little bit later in the podcast, much later, DJ, I want to start by talking post-Kansas Speedway, a very eventful cup race for NASCAR at Kansas Speedway. And of course, we'll start with Kurt Busch, wins the race, now has 9 consecutive seasons with at least one victory in the Cup Series. But I thought the most fascinating stat, DJ, was 6 car numbers that Kurt Busch has now won with in the Cup Series, 5 teams, 4 manufacturers. And I want to play what Kurt Busch said after the race.
It's a lot of years, getting old. A lot of great race teams, really cool people, great sponsors. For me, I just do my job behind the wheel. And early on in my career, I was just thinking it was all about me, making the difference. And all along, it's everybody adds to this. And at the end of the day, however many years it's been and however many wins it's been, it's the same thing that I'll always be able to go to my dad, give him a hug, or team owner in Vegas, the star nursery guy, just say thank you for helping me make it in this NASCAR world. And now here we are with winning with Toyota and 2311, and this is my family.
I know we've talked about this many times before, DJ, about this transformation that Kurt Busch has kind of gone through in his career, but he keeps giving us reasons to discuss it, whether it's, you know, this win at 2311 Racing or going to Chip Ganassi Racing and winning there and kind of resuscitating that team a little bit as well. In 20 years of covering NASCAR, I can't think of another driver who has changed his reputation as much as this guy, as Kurt Busch. And you were on a call with me earlier today, and you were talking about how early in his career, he wasn't really mature enough to handle all the success he had. He was 2004 Cup champion, and that came in his 4th season in the Cup Series. And we all know there have been some missteps along the way. So your take on what this Kansas victory meant for Kurt Busch and what it says about his career?
Well, I think it says a lot about his career. The transformation of Kurt Busch. Again, I think it's not just him. I think his brother's a part of a group that I will put there of athletes and competitors that maybe have so much talent and success come their way at a young age, and they don't always do the right thing. Not that many of us did in our early 20s, always doing the right thing. Right. Heck, some of us don't still at 60-something. So,
not but, you, of course.
But I've seen Kurt Busch make a huge change, and the understanding. And when I heard those words from him about the people, and that's what it really took, it just took me back to thinking about probably more when somewhat when he was at Roush, but more when he was at Penske, and some of the language he used there towards his team, towards Roger Penske himself. And now we've seen a different person. Now, is part of that his maturity on his own? Is part of that his wife now, Ashley, being a part of that and helping with this? But we're seeing a different person that's more appreciative of these opportunities and things. But I'll stand by something I said quite a while back. Kurt Busch has made every race team that he's been to a better team. And he's won at all of these places. You talked about the numbers. It's just outstanding what he's been able to do. I think that was like the 19th season that he's won a race, 18th or 19th that he's won. You said 9 in a row, which is just incredible for what he's been able to do. 34 a couple of weeks. So he's a Hall of Famer before yesterday, yeah, by far.
Yep.
And you know, the his championship win at Homestead and winning that was one of the most spectacular things, with the wheel running off and everything that transpired to go on and win that championship then. But yesterday, to me, was maybe his most impressive thing that he's done in this sport.
Wow.
I just think that to take this race team that is still building, and those are some of Denny's words, that they continue to build, and win at a racetrack that's a tough place to race at and to win at and do all of that, I think that performance was – he realized yesterday that might be their one and – best chance to win a race and get themselves into the playoffs, and he took and seized that opportunity. And I'm always amazed when I see these people and athletes do such extraordinary things in moments like that, and I really believe it was Kurt Busch's finest moment.
Yeah, to be able to seize that opportunity and capitalize, and now he's probably going to be in the playoffs, and it didn't look like this team, frankly, for a lot of the first 3 months of the season might even be a factor for a championship. And you just said it there, DJ. I heard you say it earlier today as well. This is a 2017 Daytona 500 winner. But this might be the biggest win of his career. I mean, I know that Daytona 500, obviously, that puts him in the Hall of Fame, along with the championship, no question. But in some ways, it sounds like what you're saying is this is even more impressive than Daytona.
I really believe that. Now, as far as maybe importance to the driver,
right. Obviously,
there's nothing like the Daytona 500. I just think performance-wise and making it happen in the most – and I won't say the most unlikely, because, you know, he had run well at Atlanta. He had a few races where they had been running good, but luck hadn't been on their side. But to take the opportunity yesterday and to pass his brother, who was running extremely well on his Toyota, and then to go up, run down Kyle Larson, and really had to work hard. Larson was being smart, taking the air away, doing everything that he could, and making it as difficult for Kurt Busch. And to understand the situation that this was the fastest car he had had all year, and to figure out a way to get by Kyle Larson, our defending Cup Series champion, to do that, I really believe it was his best performance.
And again, it was his 13th race at 2311 Racing, which two cars this year for the first time, the number 45 Toyota that he was driving. And I agree with you, DJ, he makes every team better, Kurt Busch does. I'm just going to run through the list. So Roush Fenway Racing is where he started, had a win there and the championship there. Team Penske has wins there. Stuart Haas Racing wins there, wins the Daytona 500 there. Chip Ganassi Racing wins there, and now 2311 Racing. And I mean, I'll just throw it out there as well. Again, we're in May, so why not talk about that he was the 2014 Indy 500 Rookie of the Year, finished sixth in his only Indy 500 start. That's amazing. He ran a season with James Finch and nearly took that car to victory lane at Sonoma, which is unfathomable. He made the playoffs with Fern Chereau Racing, which won a championship with Truex, but Busch had several shots to win in his lone year at Furniture Row and took them to the playoffs for the first time. Are we talking about one of the most adaptable, versatile drivers maybe in NASCAR history?
I think you've hit, I think you're exactly right on that. That's probably the best way to look at him. He is certainly one of the most talented race drivers. Just sheer driving ability and the talents and the understanding of what it takes to win big races and been big moments, and to do it with a lot of these teams that hadn't won in situations like that. And you know, I know that 2311 got their win last year with Bubba at Talladega. This was a whole different scenario with the new car and adding a second team here. This was completely different. But you just think about the other teams to where, you know, they weren't performing at times at the highest level, and Kurt went in there as the driver and made things happen. And I just think I really believe he's been – maybe his talents have been overshadowed some. And I'll put this in a two-part context that I think in the beginning, more towards the beginning – that some of his outburst overshadowed his talents there. I think on the other side of it, Kyle, his brother, his talents and his ability to win races and win a couple of championships has probably overshadowed Kirk a little bit too. Mm-hmm. But you can't take away the fact that the numbers speak for themselves. And to win all of these races with this many different teams, with all the manufacturers, which I don't know of anybody else that's done that, and then to go finished sixth as a rookie at the Indianapolis 500. Just incredible.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody else definitely who's won Chevy, Ford, Dodge, Toyota. Obviously, you can't really now because Dodge is gone. So, yeah, it's really amazing to think about. And yeah, you mentioned Kyle. I mean, I think part of the reason Kyle overshadows Kurt, I mean, for the longest time, he only had one championship, or really the first 10 years, no championships. But I think all the other racing he does in Xfinity and truck, I think, kind of put him in a different category. And, and Kurt, you know, to his credit, also had talked up Kyle before he got to Cup and said, hey, this guy's better than me. And, I mean, maybe it does make us kind of overlook him.
Yeah,
the years,
but
you know?
Can't we think all the way back to, and I think it was only 1 year of ownership for Kyle Busch in the Xfinity series with his own race team,
right?
That Kurt was the one that won a race for that race team.
That's true.
It wasn't Kyle winning a race there. So he was able to get it done whenever Kyle could.
That's a great point. And now he comes to 23-11 racing and pretty much does what he did for Kyle Busch, now for Denny Hamlin. A very emotional victory for everyone at 23-11, starting with, as I mentioned, the co-team owner, Denny Hamlin, who owns this team with Michael Jordan. Denny said this was more emotional than any of his wins as a driver.
Bob Hockers, Fox Sports. Denny, did you say that this is the most excited you've been for any win, like even your own?
Emotionally, for sure. I mean, I've obviously been excited for the Daytona 500, but I don't know why this one just feels bigger to me. I think a lot of it is because I watched it live. I think had I been on the other side of the track, you know, and just kind of looked at the pylon, it'd be one thing, but like I had a front row seat to it. And so, yeah, and I don't show my emotion a lot, but I am an emotional person, and I get emotional when like I get around the team guys, and you know I got emotional when I hug Billy at the pit box, like it's just because I see how excited they are, and it's like, and I know how hard they work, and it's like, you know, these people are part of, I mean, this is a family inside that small building we're in right now. It is a family. We are all very, very tight, and so. The wins just feel bigger for that reason.
After this win by Kurt Busch, DJ, we saw Denny get a little bit emotional, get a little bit choked up. And then we saw Kurt Busch got choked up in the Media Center news conference talking about it, too, after he was told about Denny's reaction.
There's things that an owner has to go through that are really heavy. And Denny has chosen this ownership role, and he's done it with integrity and class and ambition and motivation, and it's things I would never want to put myself in position for. He called me a year and a half ago, 2 years, and said, hey, I got a plan, and if it all works out, I'll be part of it. But wow, just learning some of the things, being close to him as a friend but also as a racer, and now he's my boss, there's a lot that goes into the ownership side. And that's why he is overwhelmed with emotions right now, because of how much responsibility it all is and how much teamwork it takes. And so this means a lot to me as well, because we started this 45 car from scratch, and a lot of guys, girls, people came from other teams. And the spirit was, we're a bunch of rebels. Let's go do this.
You've been a driver, DJ, and you know what it's like to, I think, somewhat be a part of a startup team, because you drove for Gibbs in his early years. The significance of what 23-11 has accomplished here, and why this was so emotional for Denny and for Kurt.
Yeah, and when I heard Denny yesterday, and then I heard Kurt talking about those very things and why it might be more so for Denny, I think the thing that came to my mind, and this might be a strange analogy in some way, but I look at Denny maybe being more emotional and so proud of this, kind of the way that we as parents look at our kids and their accomplishments, which mean more to us than anything that we did. My dad had said that many times about things that I was able to do in my racing career, that it meant more than his championships and wins. And I know that, you know, watching my kids in their athletics and watching Zach play baseball and stuff, you know, I get more proud and more emotional about that than anything that I was able to accomplish. So this is kind of, you know, even though Denny has two daughters, this is kind of his baby right now of starting this up. You know, it was his idea to make this happen. Michael Jordan helped him make this happen. But to see this come to fruition and then all of a sudden you've got two wins in this and you've got a car in the playoffs now.
Yeah.
I understand where Denny's coming from, but that's not a side of Denny Hamlin, as you pointed out, that we see very often, that he allows us to see that. And so in knowing that he allowed that, you could tell just how much it meant to him. And I totally understand, because you know this is Denny's future in the sport. Not that he doesn't have quite a few good years left driving the race car, but he's going to be around a long time as an owner, and to make this happen, really impressive.
And I've heard Denny kind of half joke about this, that he got this idea during the pandemic, during those few months in 2020 when we were all sitting around bored and had nothing to do. And Denny always needs something to do. And I've heard him kind of joke, maybe half joke, that was when, hey, this is a good idea. But I'm struck, DJ, that like Kurt's there saying, I would never want to put myself in this position.
Yeah.
And I think Denny like understood what he was taking on here. And I think drivers do generally shy away from it. I mean, you owned an Xfinity team for a little while, so you know what I'm talking about here. It can be overwhelming, but I think Denny kind of plunged into it knowing what he was getting himself into. How have you seen him shoulder all this responsibility and accountability he's had since last year? Do you think he bit off more than he could chew, or do you think he's just sort of understood this was going to be a real long slog, but if he had the right plan, he could be successful?
Yeah, I think that he went into it thinking that it wasn't going to affect him at all as in his driving and what his day job was, so to speak.
Right.
And you like to think that you can separate, but you really can't, because it requires something totally different, but it requires a lot of your time and efforts. And along with that, other times that you might be thinking about your car and what you need to do, and even though this was during a time that he was putting all this together and making it happen, that there really wasn't any practice sessions to worry about, there wasn't much you could do to your race cars, you still have to think about what you're doing there, sponsor obligations, doing everything you need to. But I do believe it affected him. I think that we saw it affect him in the race car and his driving some. And I totally understood. You know, we've seen other race drivers try to do it, start these teams, be an owner of a team and drive for them. But here Denny was driving for someone else and starting a team at the same time and trying to put all of that together. I know he's got a lot of good people around him, but it can be overwhelming. And I think to realize success this soon makes him pretty proud. And he should be, because this was a huge undertaking. But I guarantee you, if Denny Hamlin were 100% honest with us, he would say there were some times that yes, it affected me because I wasn't giving the attention that I needed to my driving.
Well, it is really unique. Like you mentioned, the only other guy I can really think about who did it at this level and had success is Earnhardt driving for Childress and then having DEI as well. And I was struck by Sunday during the race at Kansas. Apparently Gabehart at one point, Chris Gabehart, Denny's crew chief, said, hey, I need you to focus a little bit more on my cars, on your car, rather than the cars that you own in this race. And I know it's probably different from your perspective, but when you race in the Xfinity Series, you never had guys driving for the team that you owned while you drove for your own car, right?
Yeah. I actually did. Well, we had a two-car team come a couple of times with a couple of guys, younger guys I was bringing in. Then actually my son Jason and I raced together a couple of times, the first one being here in Charlotte.
But it
was a distraction, and I'll never forget that day, the first time that we raced against each other at Charlotte. And I'm talking about Jason, my son, that I found myself distracted in the race car, even though I had a really good car. I only out-qualified him by a hundredth of a second, and I thought I was pretty good at Charlotte. And but then, as the race went on, we separated, and so I was always wanting to know what was going on instead of maybe giving my full attention to me and my car as the driver there. And so, it can be a distraction. There's no doubt, and that's interesting that Denny, because I did hear something. I didn't know Chris Gabehart had said, hey, we need you focused back over here a little bit. But I could see where you could get out, especially as they're running well. And, you saw Kurt, he had speed all weekend. Bubba was having a good day also. I think he said that – I read somewhere that he talked about how difficult – that he couldn't even pass Bubba when he came up to him. And I think he thought that he had a real shot there as an owner to win one of these races.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly it. And you think about Talladega a couple weeks ago, they both had strong cars.
Yeah.
They both crash on the last lap. Mm-hmm. Well, Denny Hamlin's like, I think he was involved in that wreck too, and he's watching all of this around him. Not only is he – in trouble, but both of his cars are demolished. And so, yeah, you're right. I think that sort of did lead to him being so involved and invested what was happening at Kansas and Gabe Hart saying that. And I'm not saying that there was any sort of tension or like that.
No, right.
Gabe Hart, like, congratulated him after the race, but it was just like one of those things like, hey, you're still driving the number 11. And you're right, DJ. I'm actually going to play that bite from Hamlin. So Kurt Busch wins the race for 23-11, but Bubba Wallace had a car that probably would have finished top five if not for a lot of pit crew problems. Like you mentioned, Denny Hamlin said that he actually thought Bubba's car was faster than Kurt. So Dustin Long from NBCSports.com caught up with both Bubba Wallace and Denny Hamlin after the race. Here's what Bubba said.
Can you feel good about top 10 today?
Nope, pit crew sucks.
And that was pretty much all Bubba said and then walked away. So then Dustin went to Denny Hamlin and he asked him about what he thought about Bubba being frustrated.
You get a top 10 out of Bubba, but he was talking with him. He was frustrated with
the pit crew. He should be frustrated. I passed 45 pretty early, easily in traffic. I could pass the 23. And he was really, really fast. I mean, extremely fast. And the results just don't show it. But like I said, as a team, we're letting them down right now. I think just internally at JGR, we gotta work through some issues on pit road. Certainly, I think that we have to figure out how to manage races. And you don't always have to have Hail Mary stops, in my opinion. Sometimes you gotta run the ball and have a solid stop with no mistakes to keep you in the game.
So looking at the 23-11 pit issues here for Bubba Wallace, DJ, I know that as a driver, you probably want to handle it as well as you can. And Bubba obviously was frustrated, was angry. Is there anything you can do in that situation? I mean, he still finished 10th, but again, he probably would have finished top five, and this has happened a few times this year. What's your advice, I guess, to Bubba Wallace at this point?
It would be something that's just simple. I understand frustration, you know, when things like that happen. You know, I lost a few races when we had some miscues in the pits. Now, I was frustrated about it, but I also realized that as a race driver, I made mistakes too, but those guys took the car back and repaired it after I crashed it or did something, you know, that I shouldn't have done and should have been smarter at the time. Yeah. So my only advice would be, hey, just think about that, you know, they're working extremely hard. We all make mistakes. If you feel that inside, that's one thing. But don't say that publicly. You know, just go back, wait till the meetings on Monday or Tuesday, whenever they have them, and discuss this. That I think everybody within the organization probably knew something needed to be done, and they would address that. Just don't address it publicly. But, you know, we're in a different time, you know. This group in 2022, they say everything kind of – I won't put them all in that category, but there's a lot of them that whatever's on their mind comes out of their mouth. And, hey, if it – you just have to understand. And if Bubba does this, that's fine because, as I said, he probably already has been a few days that he's made some mistakes. If they start criticizing him, which, you know, nobody's going to go to the pit crew and ask about that. But if they should happen to say that, then you got to you got to man up and shoulder that too. If they criticize you because you've criticized them, I would think that just to keep peace, you can handle things a little bit better. Everybody knew that pit stops were holding Bubba back from a top five and a chance at running up there with his teammate. And, you know, in a crazy way, I know he's happy for Kurt Busch. He's happy that their organization won. But when your teammate wins the race and you are frustrated because your pit crew made some mistakes that kept you from even getting a shot to do that and running with him, then that makes things even worse.
And I know hindsight is 20/20. It's easy for me to sit here and say this, but everything you just said, especially about this – the younger generation, and Bubba is not my generation. He's definitely, I think he's 20 years younger than me. I look at how they've kind of grown up in this era of social media, and it is different for them. But like everything you just said, I kind of compare it. Like sometimes when I'm tweeting, which I know you have no experience with whatsoever, and I respect you immensely more and more each day for that, DJ. Sometimes you just got to ask yourself, what's to be gained? Yes, I want to tell the world this is how I feel.
Yeah.
But if there's no upside, you just have to resist the urge somehow.
There was nothing good going to come from that comment right there. The pit crew already knew that there was issues. Yeah. You know, they kept them from having, as you pointed out, probably a top five run or at least an opportunity for that, maybe even better. So you don't need to tell them. They understand. You know, they get it. So you don't need to call them out. That's doing – In my opinion, it's doing nobody any good by doing that. It's going to be addressed.
Does it surprise you that we're seeing so many pit crew issues still this deep into the first season with one lug nut? We saw the 43 had some problems too, as well, with, I guess, getting the lug nut off is harder than people thought it might be. And you know, sometimes you can fasten them too hard. What do you make of what's happening there?
Yeah, not because I'm trying to be and act smart, but I'm not surprised at this whatsoever. I mean, you know, we did the others other way and with other materials, other guns, everything completely different for 60 ever how many years. And to do something totally new that, even though I know all the parts and pieces are made do the things they're supposed to do and it's supposed to be relatively simple, it's not going to be that, especially when you're in a competition and you're trying to go as fast as you can. So there's going to be issues, and I think that's going to continue. I honestly believe that somewhere in the playoffs that we're going to see something like this. I believe it's going to last that long. That wow. Just it seems that when you've got five lug nuts and you get four of them on there really good and the one's not, well, that wasn't a big penalty to you. No penalty at all, really, unless it was multiple. And this one, you've got one shot at each one of those, and that's all that it is. And it just takes a slight mistake, and it seems like that's relatively easy to do. So it's just going to take more time, I believe.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we got so, or myself and probably some others in the media, got so caught up in like choreography and speed and like, how can it be harder? You're just changing one as opposed to five, and didn't think about all the other variables involved here. Where, to your point, I mean, the equipment is just, I never thought about like that a single lug would be more difficult than five just because it's one. But that one, if you said, if you don't attach it right or you attach it the wrong way, it's just, it can really screw up your deck.
Yeah, and as everybody starts talking numbers, everybody thinks, well, we've got to beat that. We've got to do a little bit better. So anytime that you start pressing, I'm not sure exactly how much faster they can get, because it takes a certain amount of time to get the fuel in the things. And, you know, so, but it's interesting. But that competition that they have inside them is always going to create issues and mistakes. And I think it's, you put all of that together and we're going to continue to see some.
So issues with lug nuts at Kansas, and also, DJ, some tire issues for several teams at Kansas Speedway. Unfortunately, in this instance, kind of a continuing trend lately at some of these speedways. Dustin Long, again, caught up with several crew chiefs whose drivers had trouble after the race. He talked to Adam Stevens for Kyle Busch. Stevens said that he thought their tire problem was just a result of maybe running over debris. Dustin talked to James Small from Martin Truex Jr., and Small said that Goodyear probably would say teams are too aggressive, and Small didn't think they were aggressive at all with Truex's setup. And he, you know, Small kind of speculated that, you know, maybe there's an issue here with a certain batch of Goodyear tires. The most expansive take on this, Dustin caught up with Alan Gustafson, Chase Elliott's crew chief, and Gustafson said,
the ability to fight through a tough weekend and or not, you know, unload off truck and be perfect and get it really close is good, because I think that's going to continue to happen, especially if they change this tire. I mean, this is all going to probably be out the window when the tire changes.
So what happened with the tire today?
Yeah, I don't know. It's something that's certainly been at the forefront of our mind.
Yeah.
We had the issue at Darlington, and we feel like we did what we needed to do to make sure it didn't happen again and protect it against it here. We had all of our tires that came off, you know, inspected and cut apart by Goodyear, and they were all fine up until that point. So, you know, the randomness of it is certainly very concerning. You know, it's not like we're changing configurations. I mean, we could change air pressure, but we did not throughout the day. It just wasn't worth the risk. So the randomness of it is concerning, and I'm not really sure what to think about that. Trying to figure out some of it. You know, 24 having their issue. There were enough configuration differences between the two of us that, you know, it's just hard to draw one conclusion.
Is there a concern this is the same tire as Texas?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is a pretty big trend. I mean, this is not a blip on the radar. This is a pretty big trend that we've obviously seen a lot of, certainly in Darlington, and now here throughout practice and on the race. So it's a very big concern, yeah.
So what to make of all that, DJ? I mean, we often hear teams complain about mandatory tire pressures and about construction, but it seems as if this is kind of across the board. And, you know, obviously Goodyear is the supplier here, the exclusive supplier, and you have Alan Gustafson hinting that he thinks they're probably going to have to consider a mile and a half tire change, and that maybe this will still be a big concern heading to the All-Star race at Texas. So You've dealt with tire problems before. What do you make of everything you saw?
Yeah, I think there's definitely an issue here. I don't think that we can put all of this on the teams. Now, whether it's a certain batch, I think it goes beyond that because they're using a lot of these tires and they're going through a lot in these times. And when you have it at Darlington, which is not as much of a load that you're putting on this as what you are at Kansas, but you have the same type issues. And everyone, I won't say everyone, but the majority of them were cautious, more cautious, I believe, at Kansas, trying not to make it happen. And I think there is an issue. Now, and that's not – I'm not putting a blame on Goodyear. I think that it goes just like we were talking about the pit stops and the one lug nut and thing. You know, this is something totally new. And Goodyear's made tires for every form of motorsports in the entire world at some point in time. They have the best people, I believe, in my opinion, the best engineers, the best people making these tires. But I think we've seen over the years that NASCAR stock cars do things when they are put in competition that and they re things happen that you just don't anticipate that are going to happen at certain places. And so I think there's going to have to be some real consideration here that it may take for certain racetracks with a certain amount of banking and load that there may take something a little bit different than what they have right now.
You kind of alluded to it, but something I've heard from teams and somewhat from Goodyear, certainly from NASCAR as well, is that that box that they've kind of been placed in with each iteration of car over the years, it just becomes more and more difficult to try to build a tire that can meet the specifications of a stock car. You know, I compare it to IndyCar, and I know IndyCar is a completely different animal, but they have an exclusive tire supplier in Firestone, and they don't seem to have these problems. Now, again, that's a totally different race car, so I don't want to like say, hey, they're good, Goodyear is bad, but I do want to delve into a little bit of, is it just the stock car is heavier? Is that a big part of it?
That's a big part of it, the heaviness of it. And we have a totally different chassis here than what has ever been run before. So to think that everything was going to be just fine coming out with this, I think that's a real stretch. I know Goodyear did a lot of testing with this car, but a lot of things changed about this car just before the season, which a lot of them were really good things for competition side, because a lot of the drivers that I talked to were very concerned that they weren't going to be able to put on a good race with these cars. And so a lot of changes were made. Has Goodyear had time to develop and go with that, with what it took to make the cars more drivable, more raceable, even though they're still very difficult to handle, as we've seen some of the best lose control of these cars? So I think there are some changes that need to be made, because you're racing every single weekend. It's not like Goodyear can be going and testing, and you have to make these tires far enough in advance so that they have a little bit of time. It's not like you can make them one week and be ready to race them the next week, because that's hard to do.
And I want to avoid piling on, because Kansas was a really good race despite the rash of tire woes that teams had. And you go back the last couple of weeks, I mean, Darlington was a really good race in terms of the way the tires were. Dover, a lot of people said that was one of the best Dover races in years because of the tire wear. So it's critical that they do this.
Yes.
But hitting it right, I think, maybe leaves them on a razor's edge sometimes.
Oh, certainly. And it's, you know, it's always going to be, if it's not happening to everybody, then you can't really say at this point in time that it's Goodyear's problem. If everybody had a flat tire, or, you know, 90% had, then you might can say that they're, but I still believe that there's room for improvement there. And I know the engineers, I know many of them are still there. A lot of them were with Goodyear whenever I was racing, and they, you know, we had a lot of great discussions, and the smartest people in the world in this business. And I know that they're willing to do whatever they need to. But you have to understand too, the cost of this and it being something new is astronomical to them. So it's hard for them to take and make a certain tire for every single racetrack, because each one of them is different. So I think you take the weight of the car, the new suspension, and Goodyear not having maybe enough time with some changes that have been made, that there are some issues there. So I think this will be something that we'll work through. Are we going to be patient enough to get to that point?
We'll certainly be watching this All-Star race next week at a mile and a half speedway at Texas. And, of course, Coca-Cola 600 the week after that at the mile-and-a-half speedway at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Hopefully it won't continue to be an issue. We won't be there. we will be elsewhere. I will be in Indianapolis the next 2 weeks, so this will be the last NASCAR on NBC podcast until post-Gateway. And you, DJ, will also be in Indianapolis for the Indy 500 on May 29th, which will be broadcast on NBC. First Indy 500 that you've attended.
Yes.
What are you looking forward to?
I think, as I've watched it over the years, and I can, this goes all the way back to when I was a kid, and I was trying to remember exactly the year, but remember my dad, he had retired from racing, so we're talking 68, maybe 69, that it wasn't on TV. We went to watch it on closed circuit TV in Charlotte. That's how big it was. He took me to do that, and so I've always just been so enamored with the whole pageantry of everything to begin with, but the talents and the sheer speed, especially after I was able to race there, to think that how much faster those Indy cars go than what our stock cars could go around Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Just incredible. And the racing over, gosh, what, the last 7, 8, maybe 10 years at Indianapolis has gotten even more incredible than what we had seen before that. So I'm just looking forward to getting there, being a part, and just, you know, not having to watch it on TV, even though our NBC crew does a fantastic job of setting it all up. I'm just looking forward to being there and to going around to some different areas. I went for qualifying a couple of years ago, and as I walked around and saw just the, you know, you can talk about 220 and 230 miles an hour, and you can say it, but when you get there and see these cars go that fast around there, it's just amazing. So I'm anxious to see, you know, over 30 cars out there at the same time and making that happen and just being a part of, just, you know, being a fan more than anything else.
Yeah, well, there's a lot to be a fan of this year. I mean, the storylines, again, are amazing. You've got Elio Castroneves going not just for two in a row, trying to become the first guy to do that since he did it in 01-02, but also trying to become the first five-time Indy 500 winner ever.
Wow.
You know, a race that's in its 106th edition, and this you could be witnessing, like, maybe the most incredible historic achievement of all time. But you've also got a class of 7 rookies, one of whom is Jimmy Johnson. Who I think you know well, NASCAR 7-time Cup champion. So the only other guys who have won the Daytona 500 and the Indy 500, DJ, are Mario Andretti and AJ Foyt. And Jimmy, of course, is going to have a chance to do that here in a couple of weeks. I had Kyle Petty on the podcast a couple months ago, and he talked about what he thought the significance of that would be, the magnitude as a past NASCAR Cup champion and Daytona 500 winner, 3-time Daytona 500 winner. What would it mean, I guess, to have Jimmy become to join Foyt and Andretti as an Indy 500, Daytona 500 winner?
I think the way that I look at it, first off, it doesn't seem that long ago that Jimmy Johnson, I remember him being a rookie at, right, at the Cup Series.
Right.
But and then, of course, all his accomplishments since that time. But to even think about that you could say Jimmy Johnson in the same sentence as accomplishing something that AJ Foyt and Mario Andretti did, just incredible. And I won't take anything away from the way that they did it by winning their Indy 500s and then winning the Daytona 500.
Yeah.
But for Jimmy to be a stock car guy and then go, and if he's able to accomplish this, and I'm going to be pulling every lap for him, nothing against anyone else,
sure,
but hoping that he can get this done and make that a threesome there that would be just unbelievable and just incredible feat. And so I hope that he can pull that off. But to go from those stock cars and then get in an Indy car and go win the Indianapolis 500. But, you know, we talked about Kurt Busch being able to go there as a rookie and finish sixth. I think Jimmy has every bit of that chance to go better that and possibly win this race.
Yeah, people say we're crazy, but he finished sixth in his first time on an IndyCar oval in Texas a couple of months ago.
Yep.
And people said the same thing about Kurt in 2014, that the knock was you can't just make this transition and not – he hadn't run any other races.
Yep.
I mean, Jimmy's coming with the experience of having run in the series, and he's also got what Kurt had. Kurt joined an Andretti Autosport entry at a time when Andretti was considered kind of top of the ball game. And Jimmy's coming in with a Ganassi team that obviously has won this race,
yep,
finished second last year with Alex Palou. I don't think it's as far-fetched as maybe people realize when we talk about this.
No, but and because I think one thing, too, is throughout his entire career in stock cars and winning 7 championships and 80-some races. Is that what he won?
Yeah.
I don't think he was given enough credit as to how good he really is as a race driver. And so I think that's carrying over to here because he hadn't gone in there and made immediate success. And it's so hard. There's nothing easy about that at all. I don't care how talented you are, but I think this is going to be his best opportunity. And again, let's hope that he can join those guys.
Yeah, it would be something to watch, something we'll get to watch in person. And looking forward to that, just like I look forward to having you here. Thanks for being here, DJ. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Glad to be here, Nate.
Our thanks again to NASCAR Hall of Famer Dale Jarrett for joining us on the NASCAR on NBC podcast. Thanks to NASCAR on NBC producers Emily Conboy and Aaron Feldstein for lining up DJ as our guest. As you heard me mention, this will be the last post-race NASCAR on NBC podcast for a little while. I'm in Indianapolis for most of the next 2 weeks covering everything at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, so I'll have lots of Indy 500 content and stories that you can read at Motorsports Talk. That's at nbcsports.com/motors. You can go there to read what I'm writing at nbcsports.com/motors. Also, hopefully we'll have some Indy 500 podcast content for this feed as well. So stay tuned, and then stay tuned for the next NASCAR on NBC podcast post-race edition that'll be coming in early June after the first Cup race at Gateway. A reminder that we also taped this podcast on camera ahead of NASCAR America Motormouths in our NBC Sports Charlotte studio. Motormouths airs Mondays and Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern on Peacock. And all the Motormouths episodes and clips are on the Motorsports on NBC YouTube channel. You also can find lots more great content and highlights daily, as well as the on-camera version of this podcast. So make sure you visit and subscribe to the Motorsports on NBC YouTube channel. And if you have any NASCAR on NBC podcast feedback, you can send it to me on Twitter, at Nate Ryan is my handle. Thanks again for listening to the NASCAR on NBC podcast.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches, but there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.